Welcome to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton. On this program, we'll be talking with two Western Slope nurses that are currently serving on the front lines in New York. First, we'll hear from Jason Burcham, a full-time ER nurse at Delta County Memorial Hospital. Jason is currently working at a hospital in White Plains, New York. And later, we'll be speaking with Paoni native Naomi Sikora, who is a critical care nurse currently working at a hospital in Manhattan in New York City. Here is Jason Burcham talking about taking a leave of absence from Delta County Memorial Hospital and his experience in White Plains, New York. KVNF spoke with Jason on May 7th.
I've been in Delta for the last almost 3 years working in the emergency room. And then when the pandemic kind of hit, you know, they did shutdown orders, the emergency room, the hospital in Delta is nowhere close to capacity or, you know, actually saw a drop in, you know, the number of people. And at that time, you know, New York City was pleading with people to come and help. Mm-hmm. And considering I've done some higher level ICU stuff before, I talked with my managers there in Delta, and they were able to swing it so I could get a few weeks off. So I started working in the ICU here in White Plains, New York, and I'm about halfway through a 7-week contract.
It sounds like you've been there since mid-April.
Yeah, April 13th.
And what was it like when you arrived?
You know, the first week is just so overwhelming. Originally, the hospital here in White Plains had around 250 medical surgical beds, and they had 35 or 40 ICU beds. They converted as many rooms in the hospital as they could. And now they have right around 500 medical surgical beds, and their ICU is 87 beds. And initially, you know, they have a couple of converted areas. I spent my first week in what they call surgery ICU. It's basically a big recovery room that they had converted over, so they had 24 patients all in one huge, giant room.
Wow.
Yeah. All on ventilators. You know, they moved equipment carts in. You would go through a door going in where you would get all your personal protection, you know, gowns, face masks. You kind of, you know, come down the hallway, you move into that area of the ICU, you have to go into an isolation room. You know, you have to put on booties that kind of cover your feet all the way up to your knees. You then put on a bigger gown that goes over. You have to wear an N95 mask anytime you're anywhere in the hospital. But then when you go into the ICU units, you have to then put a big tapper hood, which is self-contained, goes over your head, brings in filtered air. You actually wear that then over your N95.
Wow. I'm envisioning then, like a hazmat suit kind of.
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is. Yeah, okay. It takes, you know, 5-10 minutes to put on. Once you're in the room, you're in there. You can't remove your, you know, protective device to, you know, get a drink of water, anything like that. Depending on how your day is going, what's happening, you know, you usually get to leave for half an hour for lunch. That could be 11, it might be 5 o'clock.
Wow.
So when you leave, you have to go into a separate decontamination room. And they always have a couple of people in there. You come in, they spray you down, then they wipe you off. You then take off the gown. You have to leave the hood on. You can take off the gown, the booties, gloves. You put on new gloves, and then they wipe down the hood part. And then that is reused, you know. And then that's put into a decontamination. It's sprayed down again. It's put through a blue light for half an hour. So nobody can use that piece of equipment for half an hour. And then you're out the other door. And then once again, wash hands, wash face. You still have to keep your mask on, you know, your N95 on the whole time through that.
I'm just picturing what that looks like in the process of, it's very involved.
Yeah, it takes a lot of people to kind of get that down to that level so we're not spreading anything throughout the hospital.
Yeah. And what's your schedule like? I know we're catching you on a day off, and I want to thank you for taking time to talk with KVNF.
My pleasure. My contract for this one is 60 hours a week, so I have to work 5 12-hour shifts per week. So it's usually, you know, 3 days on, a day off, 3 days on, a day off, 2 days on, a day off. So it's keeping me pretty busy.
Can you share with us how many patients you're seeing per day?
In the ICU, they try to keep us at 2 patients, you know, per nurse, unless they're doing something. Some days I've only had 1 patient, but they tend to be the ones getting, like, continuous renal replacement therapy. A lot of the patients with the COVID-19 found out that they're having a lot of other problems. They're having clotting problems, pulmonary problems. Obviously, they have a hard time breathing. Almost everyone in the ICU is on a breathing machine. Lots of them are going into renal failure. I would say half the patients on the ICU are getting dialysis right now.
Okay.
So if you have to do a continuous renal replacement, it's running a much bigger machine. You're basically running dialysis on the patient continuously, you know, throughout the day. A lot of those days you'll only have one patient. But so far in my 3.5 weeks, I've had about 35 patients so far.
Okay.
The downside is 30 of them have passed away.
Wow. And these patients, I assume, cannot have visitors.
No, they cannot. No one is allowed into the hospital other than the emergency room if they're there to be seen. So they cannot have visitors. Someone graciously donated 40 iPads. So we do a lot of FaceTiming with families.
Mm-hmm. You're pretty much these patients' only in-person contact.
Yeah.
What has that been like for you?
Yeah, you're kind of their only connection to the outside world. All they see are, you know, a nurse during the day, a nurse at night, you know, doctors come through, they do their rounding. Respiratory therapy has been awesome. You know, they come through, check ventilators, stuff like that. But for the most part, yeah, you're kind of their connection to the outside world. Like I said, we're FaceTiming with families. We have to hold the iPads up so they can see and try to, you know, connect with them. Like I said, all of my patients have been intubated. So, but we still FaceTime with the families. The families can see them. They can talk to them. We hold it up so they can hear them. They have a breathing tube down their throat, so, you know, they can't talk. We try to keep them comfortable. We do sedation vacations every day where we try to wake them up. You know, can they blink? Can they move their hands, their legs? Sometimes they can. Most of the time they cannot. But no, they're intubated, sedated, you know, to try to keep them comfortable. Because most of them cannot breathe on their own. If that tube would come out, they would not last long.
And before they'd come in, have your patients had problems breathing previously?
Yeah, most of them, you know, don't come right to the ICU right away. A lot of them, you know, had been at home, and then they got short of breath. They came into the emergency room. Like, you know, their oxygen's low. A lot of them are, you know, put on a medical surgical floor. But this, the disease process on the COVID seems to take, you know, 7 to 10 days. And as they're, you know, in the hospital, they're continually kind of, you know, going downhill a little bit. Now, some people, you know, just need some oxygen support and they're recovering and going home. Sadly, the ones I see actually get worse to the point where, you know, you need to put a tube in to help them breathe.
At that point, is it pretty certain that they're going to die?
Yeah, so far, just the way this disease affects the lungs, only about 1 in 10 ever survive being intubated is kind of what the statistics that, you know, has been borne out here at the White Plains Hospital anyway.
Mm-hmm. Are your patients in a higher age range?
Yeah, there's been some in their 40s, you know, but they tended to have some pretty serious underlying medical issues, you know, prior to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them are in their 70s and 80s.
Wow.
A lot of them were nursing home patients that had been transferred, you know, from the nursing home.
Mm-hmm. What do you want people to know about COVID-19? Like, if you could tell the public anything, what would you want them to know?
You know, just try to maintain, you know, hand washing, social distancing. If you know someone is sick, it's protecting the most vulnerable in the community, which tends to be, you know, those over 60 years old, those with, you know, serious health problems to start with. They're at a grave risk. If they catch this, it's not going to be good for them. Other people are going to be asymptomatic of it, but they're going to have it and not know it. That's the tough part of this disease. As they increase testing, they're finding there's so many more positive cases that people didn't even know they had it, which is what makes it so contagious, because a lot of people don't even know.
Right. And you mentioned before the interview that you know a couple other Delta County nurses that are out in New York. Have you been able to connect with them at all?
Yeah. Monica Milton, who I'd worked with in the ER there, and also Adam Thorault, who works in the ER there in Delta. They're both at a hospital in the Bronx, which is about 30 minutes from here in White Plains, and we've had a chance to meet up once for dinner.
I bet that was nice to just see some familiar faces in a what I can imagine pretty strange big city right now.
Yeah, it is, and it's all kind of a ghost town. There's not, you know, too many people out walking around. The streets are empty. It's a different thing to see, you know.
Had you been to New York City before?
I had, you know, for vacation and other things, but I've never seen it like this. Usually it's, you know, shoulder to shoulder, you know, packed on the sidewalk. And
right.
Now you could walk right down the middle of Times Square and there's only 10 people in it.
Wow. Well, what are you doing with your time off? I mean, other than taking calls from KVNF.
Days off, usually do some laundry, catch up on sleep, try to make phone calls, you know, to family, wife, children.
Mm-hmm. Is your family supportive of you being in New York right now?
Yeah, very supportive.
That's great. And Delta Memorial seems like they were happy to let you kind of take a leave of absence here and then come back upon your return.
Yeah, they were extremely supportive of the decision. And like I said, it's just a quick little, you know, 6-week kind of leave of absence. They were only able to get my shifts there covered. Surgeries were, at the time, you know, elective surgeries are closed. Medical surgical is nowhere as busy as it had been. ICU is not busy at all. You know, they're not doing sleep studies. There were a lot of extra nurses there that would be able to cover some shifts that I wouldn't be able to do. So I was able to come out here. For that, I'm very grateful. They've been wonderful.
Have you heard anything about what you need to do when you come back?
The only thing I had heard is, you know, obviously if you're symptomatic, running a fever, cough, short of breath, you would obviously quarantine for 14 days. Mm-hmm. Right now I have none of those symptoms. The White Plains Hospital, though, here is in the midst of testing all of the staff for antibodies. Mm-hmm. So I had my blood drawn here a week ago, and I should be getting results from that. Obviously, if you've had antibodies, you've had it and already beaten it. So,
yeah,
you know, your chance of reinfection goes way, way down.
Mm-hmm. In this pretty intense experience and, you know, job that you're doing, are there any silver linings that you find?
Yeah, the community around here has been very helpful. Every day there's, you know, a pizza place, a sandwich shop, something like that, you know, delivering lunch. A couple of times on Fridays, you know, when we do shift change at 7 p.m., there's been, you know, a lot of the community out, fire trucks, honking horns, saying thank you, which is kind of overwhelming. It's neat to see.
Yeah. Was there any part of your nursing training, nursing school, that could have prepared you for a pandemic like this?
Not really. I mean, you're talking about a once-in-a-century type event right now, which, you know, if anything, just, you know, nursing school or previous career, it's still applicable to what we're doing here. It's basically just patient care. It's just they tend to be sicker patients, and, you know, it's a disease we quite haven't seen before. It makes the lungs so fragile, you know, where they tear, they get a lot of collapsed lungs. Almost all patients get chest tubes because lungs collapse. It's just stuff to prepare for something you've never seen before.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's your hope coming out on the other side of this, whenever that may be?
Well, hopefully, you know, we get a better understanding of, you know, how to treat this disease. We're finding out now, basically, do whatever you can to prevent being intubated. If you have to go on a ventilator, the outcomes have not been good. So they're trying to do more preventative. You know, what can you do prior to being ventilated to help these people breathe better? You know, whether it's the Plaquenil, zinc, azithromycin, they're trying different combinations of drugs to see which, you know, maybe can help a little bit. Different breathing techniques where you can do, like, say, high flow oxygen. Can we do that? Can we do a pressure support, like big BiPAP machines, you know, where you don't actually have to put an invasive tube down into the lungs? Mm-hmm. And this hospital has done, you know, a great job. I mean, they've had over 2,800 people go home. You know, they've cured a lot of people. I'm seeing the sickest of the sick. You know, so I mean, they're doing a great job of getting most people with this better. I happen to be in the one area where they have tried all that stuff. None of that worked. Mm-hmm. They're still getting worse. They're in, you know, respiratory failure. They're in renal failure. Their, you know, liver is shutting down. You know, their BUN, their creatinine starts going up. Their kidney is shut down. So the kidneys, you know, filter the blood, take out all of the toxins. Without that, your potassium goes up. A lot of your electrolytes, you know, get imbalanced. they're not making any urine, so they're not peeing or anything. That's where the toxins are coming out. You know, the kidneys are the biggest filters of the blood, and they stop.
Wow. It just seems to attack from the inside.
Yep, that it does. Some people it causes the renal failure or kidney failure. Some people it causes tremendous clotting problems where they get clots in their legs, blood clots in their lungs. Some have had some blood clots that have traveled to the brain and they get a stroke. And then some people, it makes bleeding an issue. It affects everybody a little bit differently, which is, makes it so hard to treat.
Jason, I really appreciate you taking the time to share your experience and insight and expertise.
Oh, my pleasure, Corey. Thank you so much.
We just heard from Jason Burcham, an ER nurse at Delta County Memorial Hospital, who is currently working in ICU at a hospital in White Plains, New York. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton. Next, we'll hear from Paonia native Naomi Sikora. I spoke with Naomi over the phone on May 7th. Naomi is a critical care nurse, and she had a different experience with her Colorado hospital. I asked Naomi if she was sent to New York or if she went on her own.
I just was hearing a lot of just what was going on here, and I'm a critical care nurse, so I knew that the needs here would be pretty high for that specialty. So yeah, I just decided like I wanted to go, and I work in a local hospital and asked them if they'd be willing to let me go for just like a leave of absence, 6 week leave of absence to come and help. And they just weren't really willing to do that. And so I actually was terminated in coming here. But yeah, so I ended up coming on my own through a local hospital here in Manhattan.
When did you get to New York?
I got here on the 15th of April, so it's kind of right around the peak of the COVID crisis. And at this point, I'll most likely be here till like the end of May. We'll see, give or take, maybe a couple of weeks, but definitely to the end of May.
Mm-hmm. And how's it going? And what are you seeing day to day?
You know, it's I've never been to New York City, and I've always wanted to come to New York City just to see it. So it's a very interesting time to see it for sure. You know, I don't have a lot to compare it to, but I know it's a crazy place normally and super busy. And right now it's a ghost town. So it's a very interesting time, especially like being in Manhattan. It's pretty quiet and there's not a lot of people out and not a lot of cars out, especially in the morning when I walk to work. It's actually kind of peaceful here. So that's been really interesting just in general, the city itself. And, you know, you can definitely feel a lot of things from people. There's a lot of fear and uncertainty and kind of like we're all feeling no matter where we're at in the world. Definitely stress and anxiety. But, you know, on a lot of levels, there's also just so much kindness and generosity. And just the other day, I was walking home from work in my scrub and just walking down the street and random strangers were passing and being like, thank you so much for your service. Thank you so much for what you're doing. I guess they could tell because of my scrubs, I was somewhat in the medical field. And it's so incredible for a city like this. I think New York City and New Yorkers in general maybe have the stigma of being hardcore and not very nice. And that's just not the experience that I've had just interacting with, you know, people on the street as well as my colleagues in the hospitals themselves. You know, it's been pretty touching, actually.
Yeah. At the hospital there, are you one of many that have come from other states?
Yeah, actually, it's pretty incredible. I believe there were like 90,000 doctors and nurses, the statistics I've heard, that came from all over the country to come and help. And so there's actually a lot of traveling nurses right now in the hospital where I'm working, and I believe that's the kind of the case all over the city. And so yeah, there's a lot of people that aren't from here, you know, that came to help, which is really neat, really special. I think that's the beautiful part about nursing. I feel like for most of us, we get into it because we really care about people, and in times like this, you really get to see that even on a greater scale, you know, that we're willing to make sacrifices personally and professionally to love on people and show up when we need to show up, you know.
Mm-hmm. What's it like in the hospital, and how many patients are you seeing each day?
Yeah, so that was, like we all hear in the news, lots of different versions of what's going on here. So I didn't really know what to expect. I would definitely say every hospital that I've heard of and the one that I'm currently in, every floor of the hospital has COVID patients. And they're all different levels of severity. Of course, I'm in critical care, so they're the sickest patients that I'm caring for. But, you know, just to have every floor of every hospital be COVID patients, it's pretty crazy and outstanding. I know that, you know, the hospital I came from in Colorado, at the max, we had, I think, 12 to 15 patients at a time in critical care. So it's just, it's beyond what any of us can really imagine, just that the, you know, huge numbers of these cases here. It's pretty overwhelming. You just live in full-on gear all day to protect yourself, which in and of itself is really exhausting and really is a different type of healthcare, I think, than me and my colleagues have ever done, you know, and it wears on you for sure. So there's definitely the numbers, I think, is the biggest thing that is just really overwhelming when you just see the mass numbers of these patients and how sick they are. I mean, I don't think any of us have really ever cared for a population like this and how sick people get with this disease.
So you had mentioned like the most patients you had seen at a time at your previous hospital was around 12 to 15. In New York City, are you talking tenfold, like hundreds of patients?
Yeah, so I can't give you the exact numbers of like the beds at the hospital I work, but I believe it's close to 800 is what someone told me recently. And so like all of those patients are COVID patients. And, you know, here and there may be someone that doesn't have COVID, but it's pretty much everyone in the hospital is COVID positive. And like I said, there's different levels of severity in their disease process. But yeah, everyone in the hospital is COVID. It's just such a weird, you know, we're used to dealing with like so many different disease processes and for everyone to kind of have the same diagnosis. And, you know, many of these patients, as I know we all kind of heard, that they usually have like a lot of comorbidities, which makes you at higher risk for sure. And that's definitely the case. So you're dealing with the COVID diagnosis itself, but then, you know, all these other comorbidities are exacerbated by that disease process, you know. So lots and lots of patients.
I know that you're dealing with a lot, but you seem to be in good spirits. What's the overall tone of the hospital and patients? Are people freaking out? Is there hope? What's the general feel?
I would say just even personally, I've had a lot of ups and downs for a lot of different reasons being here, and lots of crying and just sadness and just feeling the weight of it all. And then as far as my colleagues too, I just feel like, you know, we have a lot of ups and downs as well. One of the cool things, you know, people are getting better, which is super wonderful and exciting and hopeful. And one of the cool things that a lot of the hospitals are doing is that, like, when a patient gets discharged, they play the Beatles song, Here Comes the Sun.
Oh, wow.
And it's so beautiful and so powerful. And it's really special because you see nurses and doctors and, you know, some of the people that just have been dealing with this and been in the trenches for so long, they'll tear up, you know. Like, it's just really, really powerful to be able to see that, you know, all of our hard work sometimes really does pay off and people do get better. So I think, you know, I sense a lot of fatigue from everyone, especially in the healthcare. Just they're so tired and, you know, physically and just emotionally. And it's been such a huge, huge haul for them here. But, you know, I do see moments where they feel hope and excitement and joy and, you know, just camaraderie and just the whole being in this together, you know. So it's mixed, it's definitely mixed, you know. And then on the other hand, frustration and wanting to get back to normal life and just like, when are these patients going to stop coming in so we can be normal in our care again? It's a lot of different emotions, I think, kind of like we're all feeling all over the country, you know.
Yeah. Are you seeing any kind of flattening of the curve?
Yeah, so we actually, I kind of watched the address that the governor gives every day. I don't watch it every day, but every couple of days I watch it. And definitely the numbers, the admission rates are dropping for sure. The death rates are dropping for sure. I think the average admission rate per day is still around 1,000, which is just a crazy number of people. But less than like the 3,000 it was early on at the peak of this thing. And then deaths are, I think they're between 200 and 300 a day still, but they are decreasing as well. So, you know, the social distancing that we all had such a hard time with has made a difference in saving people's lives and just, you know, stopping the crazy spike that they saw here. So that's really encouraging to see. Those numbers are definitely dropping.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton, and I'm speaking with Naomi Sikora, who is a critical care nurse, and she is currently working on the front lines at a hospital in New York City. Naomi and I spoke on May 5th on one of her days off.
What is your schedule like? Do you have some downtime, and what are you doing in your downtime to lighten the load, so to speak?
Yeah, it's really neat because everyone asked me that question, and that's really a big concern everyone has for me being out here, and I really appreciate that. For me, I've been working 4 days a week, four 12-hour days a week, and, you know, initially I was like, I'm going to work all the time, and if I'm out there to help, so I might as well just do a ton, and 4 days has been an excruciating amount of time, so I definitely have just stuck with the 4 days a week, but, you know, they're long days, they're 12-hour days, so it's a long shift. And then on my days off, you know, honestly, my first day off, I usually just kind of lay around, weep and read.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty exhausting. It's just so emotionally exhausting, too.
Yeah.
The patient population is just so sad. I had a family the other day that it was their third loved one that had passed in the last month and a half. So you just see a lot of really, really intense stuff. And, they just need time to process that and not get hard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so easy from a distance to be detached from suffering. And I think that was one of the reasons I really wanted to be here and help, was because I just really wanted to share that perspective with those of us who still are happy and healthy and, you know, live in Paonia.
Yeah.
Which is paradise. You know, I really try to feel what I feel. I've been doing a lot of writing and journaling and been trying to really post that on social media too, to just give those of us who aren't here that personal human perspective on everything. And then I have been getting out. You know, I try not to take any public transportation because I know I am a potential vector and I'm really cautious and aware of that. But I spent a lot of time just sitting along the Hudson River or just walking around the city, trying to be, you know, conscientious of my contact with others. But I think getting outside for me, I'm just a outdoors girl.
Yeah.
So I really need fresh air and nature and wherever that can be found in a city like this. So yeah, just those are some of the things that I've been really kind of focusing on, and listening to podcasts and praying and talking to friends back home and family and my partner, and I spent a lot of time in Central Park too.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really special place. Like, everything is closed, like every store. I mean, even the restaurants, you know, there's some that are open, but like majority of the restaurants are closed and kind of hard to find food.
Yeah.
Which is so crazy. A city that's kind of known for that, you know. But
right.
It's an interesting time to see this place for sure and be here and just try to hold hands with this community, you know?
Yeah. Well, you are very brave, and New York City is very lucky to have you.
I feel blessed to be here, and I know I'll never regret this decision. I know that on a deep level.
Do you feel like your family and friends understand why you're there?
Yeah, you know, it's so amazing. All of my family and friends, like when I first told them, and my husband, when I told him, I was fully expecting people to be like, oh no, you don't want to go there, it's dangerous, and you can't go. And I, like, there was not one person that said that to me.
Wow.
And everyone was so supportive and so encouraging and was like, what do we need to do to help you? And yeah, it's been really amazing. People's support for me has just been outstanding. And honestly, that's been something that's really helped a lot in those moments where I feel just really sad and lonely, because it's super lonely, you know, super lonely. So yeah, no, everyone has been just phenomenal. And for those of you that are listening that have reached out to me, I just can't tell you enough what that's meant and how that's helped. And how I've brought that energy and love into the patient care that I'm providing here, you know. I really, yeah, just can't say thank you enough to everyone for loving on me and encouraging me and meant so much.
And you'll be there till the end of May, and then will you come back to Colorado?
Yeah, so I live in Cedar Edge, so I'll be coming home, and I'll have to be on quarantine for 2 weeks when I get home. And then I'm not sure what I'm going to do. My life changed a lot in coming here, and that's been pretty challenging professionally for sure. And I'm free, which is in some ways I think is going to be really good. I think I'm going to need a lot of downtime when this is over to just process it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We look forward to you coming back to Colorado. And again, New York is so lucky to have you. And I'm glad that you and I got to take some time to chat.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to just make this human to those of us who aren't here, and to my Teonia community. I just love you all so much and miss that place like crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was Naomi Sikora, a critical care nurse from Paonia, Colorado, sharing her recent experience working at a hospital in New York City during the COVID pandemic. You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say, it's all right.